set this thing set a bit. So we're going to do some, I think, almost final amendments today to this, and we'll meet again Monday or Tuesday, and then see if it's ready to move off to a favorable health committee, and then perhaps Congress if anything needs to buy related to that. And then to this, and then off to the governor's desk. Oh, there's a few steps in between. Okay, fair enough. We have three amendments that are prepared, plus I have a number of oral things I want to work on. And maybe there's some things I want to... maybe we'll do some of the oral stuff since at least Tom's here for now and he can read the written ones later. On page one... Oh, yeah, we'll have a DE3 amendment now, which I'll move. And then on the... I've been getting some feedback, and actually, just so you know, part of the reason this process is dragged out in this phase, as long as it has, is because I've been seeking feedback from here, just some of the vetting of the issues at this level, as opposed to a different place. And I, there's some decisions that we have to kind of come to about some of the topic discussions we've had in the interim time since our last hearing. Let's just go to page one, section one, this is a really good idea, but there's a few details that cause it to be a little problematic. And not least of which, if there's a $2,001 procedure and a person has a $2,000 deductible they haven't met, this would not allow it to be pre-authorized if it were to be pre-authorized, which was not my intention. And so what I'd like to, well, here comes the rest of the plan. You guys win from the most people here, I gotta tell you. I can tell him. And thanks for the coffee. That was good to have that coffee out there. The empty pot. Anyway, so what I'd like to do on this first one, is I don't have language, but I'd like to get it drafted before we leave today, where the plans would agree to, what I'm looking after is cost fiction kind of thing. And extraordinary, or at least unreasonable amounts of paperwork that they have to do and we have to do. That doesn't really save any, that actually costs more money than it saves. And maybe between Mr. Pender and the plans who are here in great number, before we get done in the next, maybe in the next half hour, they can come up with some language that would ask them to look into that in association with their providers. And so if you could work on some language with that, I would be grateful then I'll replace that. I think that'll be, they can get this where I want to go. And trying to avoid undue burden. So that's that's a work in progress for yet today. So, the second has to do, I'd like to make an oral amendment to section 2. And Jason, maybe, Mr. Pender, we're going to make a bunch of amendments today. How long will it take to get a DE4 done, do you think?
Mr. Chair, it depends on how many amendments.
Yeah, so, but certainly today is sometime.
Yes,
I would expect it.
Yes.
And maybe you can just kind of try to mark up something that you can make copies of. And attach some stuff to stuff you want. Anyway, so we're going to get DD4 done today, which will then sit quietly over the weekend, and I'll accept comments to that yet. And then that's what we'll pick up when we come back on Monday or Tuesday. On section 2, line 12, I'd like to strike the words greater levels of scrutiny and prior authorization and insert evidence-based standards. I think that, and so we read, ensure utilization of utilization may apply evidence-based standards in determining medical necessity. And was there a problem with the word non-emergency, too? Is that problematic? I think that was, and I think that as you, so I think I need to strike the word non-emergency on line 13.
Mr. Chairman?
And then we're going to strike line 15 and so on after. Yeah, Mr. Representative.
What was the problem with that?
The definition of non-emergency. We allow the health plans to define it. And is there a definition you would want to insert in lieu of that?
I haven't given it much thought, Mr. Chairman, but...
If you can think of something, I'm open to it. But the trouble is, actually, people like me, we were just talking about this. I'm doing years of my good predecessor's work. The previous mandate came... and arguer with these fine plans debated what their definition of non-emergency and what they would cover or not, and so it actually would reopen an old issue, which may be counterproductive to the quality part that we were worried about.
Well, I guess my thought is this, is that when it comes to medical necessity, I've found it surprising enough that I have often had a lot of different, several different lobbyists come to me and talk to me about the work that I've done on 1422. One of the things that I've been told is that, I've mentioned how broad these definitions were, and of course they're responsible. Three times I was told, well, I wrote that when I worked for. And so I think we get into some problems when we allow non-governmental groups to write these definitions in a way that really are way too broad. So, I haven't looked at this part and what the plans have done, but I just want to mention that this has been problematical for us.
Well, just the plans would have liked this language, and the provider groups would not have liked the language. So it may be the flip side of what you were thinking about it. So I think that it accomplishes the middle ground goal that we would like, the way it, if you strike, then if you go, I'll further my oral amendment on line 15, then strike everything after the word necessary, and then strike line 16 and 17. So what you then have is that we're emphasizing that you still have some reason to do these tests, which is really what I'm after, that may actually deal with a non-emergency. What I'm trying to get at is if there's some tests, this is meant to give, what I see is kind of a hierarchy. The legislature tells the plans they have to use standards. And then the plans would tell the docs that they have to use standards. The doctor then would tell the patient, I'm sorry, it doesn't meet standard operating procedure. You have no reason to need this test. There's not one clinical indicator for this test. If you come back in a week and still have it, then that may meet the criteria. But in the meantime, this test will not keep you alive any longer than you would have otherwise been alive. And so some of these tests that are pretty done to satisfy someone's concern in the absence of any medical indication drive up a ton of costs and would deprive somebody who needs it just from that opportunity. So I think it gets to what we're I think it moves the ball forward in a positive way. I'm open to your advice as this goes on yet. Any comments from anybody about that? Let me do a vote on that oral amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment adopted. And then, in Congress, we're then going to, just to catch up there, friend, we're going to have the plans work on some language for Section 1 about how they're going to help providers find worthless paperwork and eliminate it as more of a voluntary thing. And there's some, as good as my idea was, there's a few gaps in it. So.
I'm sorry, Karen. I apologize for being called out. My concern is with somebody working on something is I still don't have in front of me a proposal, a bill that is settled down enough that I can make my judgments and my recommendations, because every time I come, there's some new stuff, and this is being worked on.
That's going to get worked on today, so we're going to have a... we're not going to vote this bill out today.
I understand. So that... is that... we're going to be... when we come back together, then we're going to have a final bill that there's not tons more of changes?
I'm hoping for that today.
Okay. Because I think, Mr. Chair, that's really important. One of the difficulties is just sort of really being able to deal with a product.
Right, and I appreciate that. And I mentioned this before you came in, that this has actually been a real working committee. We've actually vetted a lot of these issues out. There's been a good deal of feedback, especially in the last week, on some of these elements that I've listened to and taken seriously. And I think in the draft that whenever it gets to leading this division will be actually a sensible, kind of a not very controversial topic.
Chair, if I may, one more item, I I do a major amount of work marking up them, and then I yeah. come in and half of it is amended, so I can't figure out whether my comments yeah. have any relevance anymore. So one thing
you I always think your comments are relevant.
Well, I don't know about that. If the session's gone and completely changed, that's I would like it to be a good use of this committee's time. But one thing I would note is that we need a fiscal note. There's many sections that call for studies and different kinds of things, and if we're going to consider the bill seriously next week, then we better have in front of us a legitimate fiscal note on the bill.
And that's reasonable, and the departments have been doing some homework on that, and some of the actions I'll be doing today will help to allay part of that.
Fair enough.
Fiscal note. And there's a, in fact, I think that there's one study I'd like, in particular, to get down. The rest of them, I think, will be. At this point will be made just to avoid that issue, because I don't know if there's any pot of money around or not, and we've never promised any money, so I'm not counting on it. So we're trying to create the dialogue and create a product out of this committee that has something to show for itself. Anyway, so just to help you catch up on, I think even as we're talking, different people are sketching out some language for Section 1. Section 2, that has been amended to read now, and ensure our utilization review organization may apply line 12, what we say, evidence-based standards in determining medical necessity for imaging, testing, and transport in order to reduce care that's not medically necessary. What we make is a straightforward sentence, which doesn't get involved in a non-emergency definition, which would be problematic for the providers and other groups. So. And we just adopted that amendment. So. That's where we're at now. This health plan card, which is simply a way to help people, help the providers know what they're getting. There was a suggestion from the Department of Commerce that we would put some phone numbers on there. Maybe, John, you want to come up and talk about that. And we were trying to identify ERISA plans, and we couldn't make them say this is an ERISA plan. And so after Minnesota plan said this is a Minnesota plan, pretty much. This plan complies with Minnesota. It sounds like a friendly statement, just like they're kind of doing a good thing, so it's kind of a happy statement. Anyway, and then Mr. Gross suggested there'd be some other phone numbers on there to contact Commerce or Health or something. And do you want to talk about that, please?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Gross. I'm with the Department of Commerce. One thing that's required today in Minnesota in 62J, I think 60, is a requirement that cards issued by HMOs, they have to have on the back the Commissioner of Health and a phone number for that commissioner. I thought it would be appropriate that the cards are issued by insurance companies have on the back the fact that they can contact the Commissioner of Commerce if they need some assistance or help. That would, I think, readily identify to most people, if they read their card front and back, that those are the two entities that regulate those types of health plans. But more important, sort of clue in the person that this is insurance and it's being regulated by the state. Jokingly, I'd like to see on the back of those cards too that says if this is regulated by, this is ERISA self-insured and regulated by the U.S. Department of Labor, then the U.S. Department of Labor number should be on the back. But I would assume that that's a huge ERISA issue and you never get there.
Well, you can't make them do anything, so. Right. And that's the whole reason we're there. So you would suggest, in addition to this statement, that there'd be some phone numbers on the back?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I would suggest if possible.
There's
something on the back that just says if
for information call or for
companies, they're issued by the insurance company, and the blue is that they just put something on the back here that Mr. Commerce is
present. Is there any objection to that? Does that matter? Simple? Mr. Griffin. I don't have one chair to them. Did it? Who do you have a chair?
Thanks, man. Yeah.
Actually, this is an official check. There's a page about it, so.
Yeah. Yeah. My name is Phil Griffin. I represent also Karen Minnesota, but I'm carrying with me my Blue Cross card today because I'm a Blue Cross enrollee. And the only caution that I give the committee is that we already have requirements in statute for phone numbers on the back. So if there are the certain phone numbers for Blue Cross, there's the prescription phone number on there. And we really, not to be joking, but we're running out of room. With my vital, I think there's a print that we're at because we're down below 8-point print. And it gets pretty small when we try to do that. So that's the only caution that we have tonight.
Could add that the Vice Minister
I think that we've got that information currently on the card. I think your initial point is trying to draw that difference between ERISA and state regulated plans is probably a good one. But I just want to exercise that caution.
I said that the I'm just trying to flesh this out, so it just may not be physically room to put it on there. Is that what you're referring to? Does that concern you at all, or is that just another topic or another data, do you think?
Mr. Chairman, again, it's clearly as a suggestion.
Oh,
obviously,
I'm trying to take all your suggestions, so I'm just trying to work it through here.
Again, if it's not, there's no room or it's not reasonable, then just we'll wait for another day.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing that we might want to do is there's an opportunity to try and talk about some of these things. The Administrative Uniformity Committee is a pretty good forum for working through some of these discussions with providers and plans on how to get things in an appropriate fashion.
Should we tell you to do that? Should we draw language that tells the committee to do that?
I don't think we need language.
You're trying to avoid burdens here. You're trying to save a few words, save a few pennies for the taxpayers you need, adding less words in a month. So you'll work on that. But Mr. Grossman, you can talk about phone numbers and
thank you.
I think it's a great thing. So I guess we'll leave that alone. I'll indicate it should be on the front of the car. You'll find a nice place and a uniform place so my staff can figure out what's going on. All right. There's some questions about the purchasing pools, and I don't see your bill or Liz here this morning. Was there an amendment to article to section 4?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The
that's A16.
A16, correct.
And just so you know, I'm still trying to figure out a couple things about this, and all the parties of this topic aren't around today, so I'm not going to take it up right now. I do want to move the A16 amendment, which would make sure there's some question about if anybody's even going to do these pools, and I respect that. And if someone does them, then I guess it's just another few extra words of law that we've tweaked. We certainly don't want to cause any harm, though. And this is brought to me by AMA. Yeah. And this just says that this won't get in the way of somebody doing what they're already doing in a positive way, which I do not want to do. Any questions about the A16 amendment? I think it's just straightforward. It just says this is not meant to step on somebody who's doing some other good thing. Any comments about that? Mr. Gross?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to get a better feel of what's the intent of that.
That whatever this is said is not going to interfere with what's going on already in two other sections of law of their vehicles.
Okay.
Does that seem like this is whatever that is?
Clarifying language.
Right. I don't think it broadens it any way. Any other comments from the audience or from members? Mr. Pender, Representative Samuelson.
I'm a little fuzzy on this particular area, just because I'm trying to figure out how it's going to actually play out, and if there are going to be providers that would opt into this type of program, because there's no leverage there. It's strictly a voluntary program, and I know that I have had constituents that have called and questioned why there isn't a discount on private pay. So I think that that's very important, but I still go back to the leverage factor that there doesn't seem to be any leverage within that, being that it's a totally voluntary program.
On the pool, the voluntary pooling?
And the 25%?
No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about...
I thought we were on 16.
Amendment A16.
Okay. I'm sorry, I thought that's...
Oh, no, this
was
this
involved
has to do
there.
We'll get to that, and I've got an idea.
Okay.
I have to write an amendment on the fly about that one, too.
Yeah, I'll return my comment to a later time.
So this is has to do with who will not be included in this purchasing pool thing, and there's an issue that's outstanding yet. About the refund of the reserve thing, which I'm not going to resolve today, unless because it's problematic, and I think I'm just going to do some research over the weekend on that, and we'll maybe take that out if it's. Do you want to talk about this now? This lines 14 through 19 on page 3, and the motion would be just to take it out and not have any provision for a return of reserves. Does anybody think that we should leave that in? From the service co-op side, is that something that would, you want to talk, do you feel confident to talk about this or interested in, or are you just here to observe today?
I'm observing.
All right. Yeah, tell us who you are.
Mr. Chair, Sam Walls up with the...
Did you bring coffee today? You didn't, did you?
I did. Well, there's some coffee.
It's empty, yeah.
It is.
And the plans brought us empty pots. So
Mr. Chair, members, I'm not exactly sure how the co-ops have their structured. I don't think there is a provision that would allow an individual school district, city, county, unit government to take their reserves back. If the entire pool went under, those reserves would go back to all the pool members. I don't know how they would divide it up. If you want to work out an arrangement somehow, I don't know exactly how you get what the best structure is to put a provision into.
Let me ask you a question. There's nothing prohibiting you from returning reserves if you wanted to.
There's nothing prohibiting, correct.
So if you wanted to return reserves, if you just had an interest in doing that, you could make that part of the contract. When they came in, you could do that?
Mr. Chair, I think that's correct. When you're, hypothetically, when you're designing these pools or putting a pool together, you could write in that, like a joint powers agreement with all the groups.
So that makes this whole thing moot then, because it just would require, you could still allow it if it made sense.
Mr. Chair, that's fine.
1%, 10%, 100%, whatever you could. I think that I'm just going to move to delete that section then at this point. Thank you. These were impressive. So I'm going to do an oral amendment to delete. Actually, we have an amendment on the floor in front of us here. Let's act on the A16 first. All in favor of the A16, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. A16 adopted. I have an oral amendment then to remove lines, the new language on lines 14 to 19, which made sense at the time. It doesn't make sense anymore. This is a good plan vote for the day if anybody wants to score it. You want a roll call on this one? all in favor, do you understand what we're doing? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, that amendment is adopted. That's all we have on this section. Is that it, Mr. Pender, for now?
That's right. Sure.
Well, there was something that's different. Okay. So we're leaving that there. This may just be a section to have that's entertaining, that they provide an option to somebody sometime. But right now there's no harm in this section, is that correct? And there may be some possible benefit somebody wanted to do this. Right, so we got it now fixed that nobody would be hurt by it. Okay. I appreciate that. So at least we're down to neutral on that one. Now on the cash payment discount cards. I've talked about this with quite a few people. And I think I like it the best of anybody in the legislature and in kind of a small group about that. And so, but what I do discern is that there's a need to declare that a provider can offer a discount if they want. And something occurred to me. It's been beating in my head for probably 15 or 20 years that we have to have a non-fraudulent billing system, which seems like kind of a good idea. You can't have a dual fee schedule. And then one of the people that would come after me if I did have a dual fee schedule, at least one that was discerned as that, would be RICO, would be the federal people under RICO racketeering statutes. And I wonder if we would allow a person to have a cash discount up to the Medicare fee schedule or down to that, if that would keep us out of the federal issues, because at least you're not going to charge anybody less than Medicare actually paid, which would give providers quite a bit of latitude in discounting within reason based upon their need to bill anybody. Anybody got a thought about that? Because if you look at the Hatch proposal, which allowed providers to charge as low as they would get a discount of medical assistance thing plus 10%, which no one could work for that. That would be a price that would put them out of business. That allowed them, that the point there was they were allowed to use a discount. That would give them a state-sanctioned discount. My card would give this group a state-sanctioned discount. So if we just say you can discount it, you get rid of all the bureaucracy about having a card and even the price. We allow providers then to discount at least down to the Medicare fee schedule for people that are going to pay cash at the time of service. Which then takes away the fraudulent matter because you're taking away all that insurance department that they have to utilize. In my clinic, I'm convinced 35% of my income at my clinic goes to pay for the billing department to take and the duties of prioritization and these other issues we talked about. I'm fully convinced of that. And so if I would discount 35% off my fees, which I don't do now, then we would actually be even on that book of business. And you could, and that would also help the uninsured, and the uninsured then could go and they say, would you be willing to accept a cash discount? The providers then could do that. And I think we should have a second exception where they could even do a deeper discount for rare exceptions where there's a charity need or some hardship case to allow that as being the rare. But the common systematic decrease would be down to the Medicare price. And I think that's fair to the auto carriers. I think it's fair to the Blues. I think that Medicare kind of resembles, let me just ask the provider, the plans, this Medicare kind of resembles your fee schedule too, isn't it about the same?
Lower.
Medicare's lower. But you don't mind that we allow them to charge cash for the lower. Is there any objection to that from any of the offhand? Mr. Barch, how you doing? Say any more coffee to do?
Mr. Chair, the recommendation for our funding. As we discussed last night, I don't think there's anything in current law that prohibits any provider from giving a discounted rate to someone who comes in without insurance. We're a provider, we also own and operate Regents Hospital. We have a number of occasions where people come to Regents without insurance or any coverage, and we do have in place a discounted model form where through a compensated formula we'll walk through what their ability to pay is and use it. So I understand what you're trying to do. My point is that I don't know if you need something in statute that would allow a provider to do this. I think they're already allowed to do it under current law.
Yes. And I'm not convinced of that, but I appreciate that you think that they're allowed to. I think if we say they're allowed to.
Mr. Chairman, we do it.
I understand. Just because it's customary doesn't mean it's legal.
Mr. Chairman, it's legal.
And so when that same person comes in, okay, they came in yesterday, and they had some problem, and you did an exam of some kind and some service, and they come in, maybe there's some therapy or something, and they come in tomorrow with an auto accident, and you're going to have, and they need the same therapy again. Now they had a sore neck, and now their neck is sore, and you're going to do something for them. And you do precisely the same set of CPT codes, and you're going to bill an auto carrier double what you just billed in yesterday. I think that's problematic. And so I think that we need to...
Mr. Chairman, in one instance, it's a person without health insurance and ability to pay. Therefore, we go through the opportunity of finding a way to collect something from them. If it's an instance of an auto accident, they are covered through an insurance policy for no-fault auto, assuming one or the drivers have insurance coverage.
I'm not
in that instance, it is illegal for us to charge them or get payment from them and then at the same time bill their insurance carrier.
No, I respect that, but I think that the state law should clarify that, and I think it's silent on it, and I just think it's not going to cause any harm in your arrangements with people, because you can still, we'll even give a hardship exemption, you can go below the Medicare thing, but I just think it would be beneficial, and it would help the cash-paying non-insured population, I think we disagree on the need. I think we agree that we think it's fine to do it. And so if you call it comfort language to me, then you can call it that. I think it would be, I think it's beyond that. And I don't know, I'm just surprised. I talked to Hatch about this, and he didn't seem to understand this either. And this has been a topic in my profession for 20 years, just so you know about, and to be very scrupulous about having one fee, one price, one fee, and so you mail it out as that. And I would... So I think it protects the interests of, especially your side of the, not the hospital side, but the payer side. So I think it's friendly. I don't think it's unfriendly too. I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't suggesting that it was friendly. I was just suggesting that it could be unnecessary.
Okay. If it's unnecessary, then I'll be happy to get it drafted. If it's unfriendly, I'll negotiate further. But Mr. Pender, could you work on some language that would say that a provider may offer discounts, same-day cash discounts, much like a card would have done, and down to the Medicare fee schedule, not to exceed that discount, and then that for that they would be required to provide a diagnosis and a statement of medical necessity, and then they would then in that case use a modifier in their CPT, probably a 0.52, I think, is that the one that reduces it, and then if they billed you guys, you'd only have to pay based upon the billed price, and if they did in fact discover that they had insurance later on, they could not bill the retail price, they would only bill for what they actually paid.
All right, Mr. Chairman, now you lost me. So I understand the ability of someone to come in and negotiate directly with the provider,
yeah.
In which case they can arrange a cash discount payment,
yeah.
But anytime you bring into it our billing department or you bill us for that same service, then no, it's the negotiated rate that you have between
yeah.
us and the provider.
Yeah, maybe the plans are different, but people just, I mean, someone's going to find a way to, and this is not part of the amendment, I'm just talking out loud about how it works, but the people would, if they did wind up sending it to some carrier, and you know somebody's going to, they'd have a diagnosis and they'd have their medical necessity thing in, and the carrier, let's say it's a Prudential and it's an 80-20 plan or something that their mother had that they didn't even know about, but they only billed them the price that they paid, so that's all. So they would have to come back and either reopen up. Maybe it's moved to this.
Mr. Chairman, if you're giving the patient a cash discount and everything is there, then
yeah.
billing the insurance carrier post that
these tools is trashed.
you're seeking payment for the same service.
No, I don't mean the provider would. The patient might send it in until you get reimbursed. Out of their HSA or out of something.
That's currently allowed. So
wait, no, I'm just saying. So I'm not arguing.
Okay.
So we're agreeing.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
I think I'm in the right ballpark now, right?
Yeah.
But I just have a question. How many providers actually do give discounts for strictly private pay patients, and how many, what percent of our population really function on that private pay basis without any other form of insurance?
Mr. Chair and Representative Sampson, I don't know the answer to that question. I guess just through anecdotally, dental providers often more than others will
right.
arrange discounts
mm-hmm.
or payment schedules with their patients because they are a more cash-based system.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them don't have dental coverage. On the health side, it'd be fairly rare, but you do see, and I think you had someone speak to this committee about setting up their cash-only clinic or pharmacy setting up.
Well, there is a cash-only pharmacy out there.
Thank you. I think this will help. If it's only comfort, then I'll accept that. I think it may go beyond comfort and allow some other practices to evolve that will be very market-driven. I think it'll help people get some care they might not otherwise get, especially the uninsured. So, Mr. Pender, do you have a question for me?
Mr. Chair, just I think the problem here is the payment practices and regulations of the insurer. I don't think there's anything illegal about a provider giving a lower rate to a patient who can't afford it. I think the problem is that, for instance, auto insurance pays only the usual and customary rate, and if you submit a claim for auto insurance, you're certifying that the charge you're doing is your usual and customary rate, and they define that as not including charity care, you know, kind of thing. So you have to, in other words, it has to be your standard rate, and if you're giving away a lot of your care, then your standard rate is maybe some average of your charity care and your.
Let me ask you a question back then.
Price.
If I'm a Blue Cross provider and let's say they pay 65% of my standard rate, is it's something in that range, I don't know what to say. So if I'm charging $100 and they pay $65, what is my standard rate? Is it 100 or is it 65?
Mr. Chair, I think it'd be however they define it in your provider agreement. So I think what this amendment would have to do is to focus on the provider agreements and the insurance policies like auto and work comp that don't involve a provider agreement necessarily, and say that you can base the rate you bill them on your non-charity care rate, and don't have to take into account that you give away your care or give.
If we're silent on that, does it make a difference? Do you think if we just say that they could, does that make their usual and customary rate the rate? Because they'll actually have kind of a, if their usual price, most of this is actually their usual price is going to be, this is going to be a very small segment of people that are going to take advantage of this. 6% if that's the uninsured rate right now, or age, or however it scores out. 92% or 94% will be using their insurance in most cases. That would be the usual, I would think, then. Am I on track or on that?
Whatever's done with this legislative, we'll have to focus on what number the insurers want to get from you when you send in a charge. And so I think there need to be language specifically saying that they can't have something that bases your usual and customary rate, let's say, on the lowest charge the lowest price you've charged to any patient for that within the past month or something like that.
So this is actually a good dialogue, I think. So maybe the amendment could say something like that, providing a discount in return for same day payment down to as low as a Medicare rate, which is not going to be included in his usual and customary rate.
I think that's the kind of thing you would need, and that then would get at the fraud kind of thing you talked about, where I think where the fraud comes in is where you're a provider sends in a charge and there's something in the provider agreement or otherwise that says that when you send in something you're certifying that this is your standard rate or your usual and customary rate or whatever, and based on the, then it's based on how they define it.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, one concern of mine just popped into my head there, by specifying the amount to which a provider may give a cash discount, do you in essence set an amount at which they must charge a patient who comes in without insurance?
Well, then I think we should have one more clause, like for a hardship, where they may on a more rare basis. This would be just systematic. I think we need a second part about that, which is to your point. You wouldn't hope that people would come in all the time and you'd offer them your deepest discount and charity plus kind of program. But I think if we allowed them on some infrequent basis to have a deeper discount for people that have a hardship or something, some language like that, that would keep us all, I think.
Mr. Chairman, would you also want to think about or include an exception for, say, family members? I know, for instance, my uncle's a dentist. I think my father's got me for some cleaning and wasn't charged. He got the family discount. But by, again, placing the maximum amount of discount in law, do you then create a situation where, in all of those instances, the provider would be required to bill the patient a rate not to exceed the Medicaid rate?
I think we're supposed to pay Minnesota care tax on our charity care.
You pay it on gross revenue.
Yeah, I think we're supposed to impute some of our stuff we do that's given away. I remember that as a. Why don't you just include something that this is not, that they can work on family members and so on?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess my point is again that it seems that we're already operating under a system whereby providers are able to work with cash paying clientele to create a discount service. And by trying to put something in statute that allows them to do this at a certain level, we may create unwanted or unnecessary limitations on what's already allowable under current law.
Let's hear from MMA talk about this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Erin Sexton, representing the Minnesota Medical Association. I just really want to echo what Mr. Barsh is saying. I don't think this is a step we need to take, and I think it may make it more complicated. Because right now the usual and customary is your charges, and then it's discounted based on what physician's contract or provider's contract is with health partners, Blue Cross Blue Shield. But it's all discounted based on what your original fee schedule is. So And right now, it's my understanding, I think a provider can negotiate or can discount that rate to what they need to do. I don't think we need this language. So I just like to echo what he's doing. I think he may just be making it more complicated.
Well, actually, I'm not comforted by your comments. You say, as you understand. And I think it's all as we understand. I don't know that anybody knows the law. And and if everybody in the agencies everywhere says this is not an issue, then whatever concerns they have are just kind of floated away. And through custom, we've gotten away from the concerns about dual fee schedules. But when you have one plan, like when the autos pay 100% or 98% or whatever they wind up paying at the end of the day of someone's charge, and then you're giving them precisely the same service to somebody who's going to pay 10% of that to the next guy, that's really unfair. I mean, you're not sticking up for the auto car carriers, which is ironic. You're looking after everybody. But it's just curious that there's a fairness thing, and if you understand what I'm... So I think that we need to be... I'm not comfortable that... I think the law is silent on this, is my thought. And I think that... that's my concern. This point of this card deal was to try to find a mechanism where a person would be allowed to give a discount of some number, pick a number. And I think in this Medicare language, you're up to almost 50%, which is a very deep discount, which most people wouldn't want to give that much. Yeah, that's my thought on it, and I think it's friendly. And I don't know that a lot of your providers would even take advantage out of any of this, because most of them are in plans, and they'd be aware of
you. I think you're right. I mean, we do have a low number of uninsured. They may not take much advantage of it. I don't know.
Yeah.
My assumption is what happens is they bill what the usual and customary is to someone who's uninsured, and if they don't receive payment, they try and collect that payment. And if not, it can be written off as bad debt. And I guess I don't know if you say that you can discount on the Medicare. Then do we have to then continue to discount or in the charges of Medicare or bad debt? And I think it just maybe making it more complicated.
No, you still have bad debt. I mean, this doesn't change any bad debt procedures. It just... I don't even know who to ask, because I thought Hatch would know about this, because when this was discussed, it was back when Humphrey was the Attorney General, and we were told that they wouldn't come after us if we had this apparent dual fee schedule. And even the feds could under their racketeering statutes, which I'm not convinced that's changed at all. And it's maybe who they choose to go after. I think in the medical providers, most plans that have any coverage at all cover all the medical stuff. And so... they're covered, like they're in groups, and the groups are in almost everything. And so they're, I think some of the providers that are in the other communities, if it be chiropractors or some of the other alternative providers, are not covered as broadly, and they would find themselves in more often a cash situation or the desire to discount for cash, and that would come up more often than probably in your experience. That's what I'm getting at. It's meant to be only a positive to try to help the uninsured to be allowed to access care, and I think that even more would go if this were more widely done. And maybe you'd find some of your providers would say, well, let's knock off 20% with, if you just want to pay as you go, and might help some of the rural patients, and that's all. Any members want to, Representative Samuelson?
Yeah, I'm still kind of messing around with this one. First of all, the part about the card or the fee for the card?
That's probably going away. The whole section is fine. This is going to be a replacement for that. That we would state in some positive, in some proactive way that you could indeed discount for cash.
Well, then my main question is, why do we need to give permission to providers to discount care? I mean, isn't that what we're doing and they're already discounting? I would rather see a group of providers come together and say, hey, if you guys are totally uninsured, strictly private pay, we will discount, whatever. Instead of the state really getting into this particular area.
Well, we would give them the license to do that. So they would have clear authority to discount down to the Medicare level anyway, so you avoid any federal interaction. That was the point of that.
Okay.
Which is about half. And so you could discount 50% if you wanted to go that far.
Mm-hmm.
If you so chose.
It's still up to the provider, though.
They wouldn't have to. This would just allow them if they wanted, and you could have a group that could be discount, disco medical. You can, anyway, that might catch on, or maybe it wouldn't. And then they would serve people. Anyway, it's the best I can. I'm trying to work through the comments I've gotten about the cash. The good, so at least the card thing can go away.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can check with some of your folks and see what they think about it and what they've been saying. I just think it comes out less in your side of the professional.
Mr. Chairman, but I think Mr. Rush is right that this may cause more trouble than it.
Well, for instance, there's some chiropractors that want to do, you pay a flat rate for a month of care, and it's kind of a maintenance thing, and then you pay a deeply discounted price, probably approaching these prices. The question is, are those legal or not? There's a real question in our profession if they can do that or not. And it doesn't come up in your profession. You mean, how many immunizations do you want this month? Well, one would be fine. You know. But you might want to go several times for a condition that's a chronic condition and like getting that care. And then there's a family plan where you pay some $99 a month or something. And that is not thought to be allowed by some people. Just so you know, that's where this comes from.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask you to look into that because I don't think there would be anything that would prohibit that. It's the same as massage therapy is now covered by some instances on insurance. There are still a number of massage therapists operating for cash payment only across the state, many of whom will take a widely varying number of payments for cash. And I would assume that the same would be true of the instance you're speaking of. Unless, of course, you would be trying to bill an insurance carrier at the same time. That's where you would get into trouble.
I appreciate that. I'm not getting it. There's no billing that goes on with any of these cash days. That's insane, isn't it?
Just to reiterate, I think that something like this initiative needs to come up from the providers, and if they want to work together on something like that, that would be fine. Because it just seems like too much going into a state-directed healthcare plan that would be all-inclusive or, you know, the universal coverage. I just get a little bit concerned about that and taking rights away from the providers.
All right. Well, can we do this for now? Can we draft an amendment? People like to react to that language. And I think my suggestion is we're going to take out Section 5 and at least put this language in for the weekend so people can react to it and I can ask Mr. Hatch and other people what they think about it, if it's even necessary. If I'm told it doesn't matter, then I'm not going to proceed with it. But if there's some legal counsel I can ask other people, but people react to words.
Mr. Chairman, can I maybe give one other suggestion, and that is if you could do a search to see if there is anywhere in statute something that would prohibit providers from giving a discount to patients. I don't think that's the case, and I think if you did a search of that, you'd find there's nothing in law to preclude that. That might give the chair and others some more comfort as to why not we need to do this.
Well, I think I'd like to, if I could just put the amendment on for now, that will help people.
Chairman, it's your committee.
I know, and I think the people like to react to what's in the bill instead of what's not in the bill. And so if I get a little amendment put together that says my little, I think, innocuous piece. Do you have something drafted, Mr. Pendleton?
No,
Mr. Okay, can you write something up? Just at least for the weekend to provoke the discussion, because if it's already allowed, then I have no problem. But I'm not convinced. Mr. Epson Powell.
Just this question. If it were not for tax considerations, would you be able to barter services?
Yeah.
That's my understanding.
No, that's why we have to report that.
Yeah, on taxes, but other than the taxes, is there anything that prevents you from, or a dentist, for instance, doing a crown in exchange for some sheetrock being in his home? I think that kind of gets me to the same question.
Yeah. Fair question.
Yeah,
so if the committee would just indulge me and allow me to just, we'll put an amendment on it, and if it's problematic, I'll take it right back out. So if you could draft something that says a provider may discount services up to the amount of Medicare reimbursement for cash payment same day, et cetera. That they could do, and then another sentence would be that for matters of hardship or charity care, they can go beyond that on a infrequent basis, and that none of this would apply to family or members and like that. Just at least the placeholder one, I need it today.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think I would have to specifically deal with what I talked about earlier,
right,
about
insurance. And then this would have to be usual and customary.
Yeah, because I agree with Mr. Bartsch. I don't think there's any law that that prohibits a provider from discounting fees. And the only thing is the insurance situation.
I'll check with a few boards.
Provider never think
is but at least if I have language, then they can react to that. So if you could get that written up while we talk, and we'll come back to that today. So. I appreciate the dialogue.
Okay.
And so it's my intention to delete Section 5 and replace it with other language. That was our discussion last night, so at least I'm coming halfway your way. Okay, on Section 6, I have an oral amendment to that. On line 14, strike the word and. You need a comma, probably. And then after the word cooperatives and public, and insert ed and public employee insurance programs just to kind of get that information. Is that clear? On line 14 on page 5, we after the companies, insert a comma, delete and after cooperatives, insert a comma, and then insert and public employee insurance programs. That's the Keats, just to kind of see what they're up to. I think they're a littering group. This is just who gives information. And then on line 22, after the four, we insert who to contact to obtain. That makes the work a lot easier for the commissioner. And that was who you can get a hold of to get something in there. Because I guess this is problematic with the plans because they have the rates vary so much depending upon so many variables. Might be good for business too. They're going to compete. They can get to be the contact number. And then on line 28 in that section, after the word for, I'd like to insert the word employers, comma. After the word consumers, I like to insert a comma, and then add providers, comma, and others. And so then this is pushing this, this information to be useful for employers, consumers, providers, and others, as opposed to just to being, kind of opening up who would be benefiting, just to kind of help the commissioner decide who we're trying to help. Any questions about that section of the amendment? It's just kind of clarifying. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment's adopted. I'm moving along to Section 8. This is a Knobloch bill. It's already passed the House, and I think it's redundant to put it in here. So I'm going to move to take out Section 8. A great idea, but I guess not for this bill. So we'll just try to keep our bill unique to our own particular work. Any questions about that? So I'll move to delete Section 8 on Article 1. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. That amendment prevails. Okay, what else? I think that, I need to go back to Mr. Pender. I think I made a mistake. There's Amendment A-15. I'd like to move Amendment A-15 and orally I'd like to strike lines 3 to 6 because I think we got rid of that refund business. That's no longer germane because we struck the whole section. But I need to move, instead of my oral amendment, you need to help me redraft this now. I actually added the PEIP thing. Maybe I just need to add created in Section 43.316, I think. that necessary to put that in, Mr. Pender?
Sure, it's not necessary, but I think it helps people who don't know what that is to,
okay,
you know, to figure out what it is.
So, members, I'd just like to move. Maybe I'll just make it a little withdraw my 815 motion, and just after the word programs, just insert the words created in section 43A.316. Just to make a technical clarification.
Well, it should be the singular program. It's just
I'm sorry.
It's just one program.
So I'll incorporate that into my amendment. Any questions about that? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. So I think that concludes Article 1. Anybody else have any things they want to change about Article 1? Is that language for Section 1 of Article 1 ready? Mr. Gross.
I got a quick question, just for clarification.
Yeah.
In Article 1, this is on page 3, lines 6 through 8, where the pool that's coming in has to put in some reserves,
yes,
based on their experience. Is that still in there?
Yes.
Okay.
Is that a bad idea?
Again, a purchasing pool is going to be created by a group of people and somebody, and then they're going to go out and purchase insurance. And so if they have to come up with size premium plus the reserve, I think that could be problematic.
First, we make that must or may, then it becomes. So it's actually, if we make it a may, then it doesn't have to be there, right?
I would think that, at least in my mind, I'm questioning if by putting that language in there, you're creating more of a problem for the purchasing pools to, in a sense, be created and get started. Because
so again, just delete that?
I would suggest you do.
Because they could always acquire anyway without us telling you.
But, well, again, I think the biggest problem that sometimes you have with creating a pool is just trying to come up with members and come up with a reasonable premium that they find.
So you suggest striking that?
Yes.
So I'd like to go on page 3, move to delete lines 6 to 8. Members understand the amendment? All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That is adopted. And that business about who's going to be that $100,000, like $10 million, I think that's later on, isn't it, about the reports? Is there some language on section 1 yet about how the, is that, why don't you bring, come up with that? Do you have a theory to us? Welcome. Do they need coffee? I think I want a cup of coffee, maybe that's what we're getting at here.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Jeanette Coleman with Medica. Not being a very good drafter, the concept I have for you, and I thought we could work with Tom, but the idea is to take section 1 and take the intent of that and move that into the section studies. I guess it would be in Article 3, Subdivision 5. Section 4, Subdivision 5. There's a study here to reduce the administrative costs. And the thought is possibly you could add 3, where it would be processes administered by utilization review organizations and health plans regarding prior authorization to ensure cost effectiveness of the requirements. And Mr. Pender will make that sound much better. The idea is that the issue that you're trying to address could be studied in that study regarding administrative efficiencies or reducing administrative costs. And I believe that was your issue.
Yeah, and actually I'd like the plans to do some of the work because I don't have any money. So is there a way to make that the plans would interact with their providers and make that an internal thing?
I think there is a lot of that work already going on in different forums.
And it's actually more comfort language. It's not any big, you're doing it anyway, but it just kind of shows that we're trying to work on the admin part. And maybe we'd even give credit to the work you're already doing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Mr. Chair, we can work with Mr. Pender and get.
Yeah, I'd like to get something done today, and we're going to leave here by 11. So,
okay.
If you could Mr. Pender has a little work, he has to come up with a cash discount thing and this, so that's fine. So if you want to go over and...
Mr. Chairman?
That's in
I'm sorry, where were you going to do that? Article what?
That's the first...
Article 3, Section 4, I believe it was.
We'll come back to that.
Subdivision.
Okay. So why don't you go work on that, and we'll... very good. I think time is going to run out on this for next fiscal here. But, so now moving to Article 2. So do you want to go work with him on that? Okay, you do it now. Okay, thanks. I need to change on page 7, line 21. I need to change the word violation to conviction. That's all your concern, right, Mr. Gill? Okay, so this way they're not going to just be sending all kinds of stuff over for any violation, because that's a pretty vague thing. The word conviction means it's actually something that's... On page 7, line 21, we're striking violation and inserting conviction. Okay, all in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the amendment's adopted. Let's see, I've got something on the hospitals here. On page 30, after the word provider, page 7, line 30. Page 7, line 30, after the word provider, or after the comma, I don't know which. We need to insert the language, except those reporting under subdivision 2. Although, actually, it goes at the end of the red line, I think. After the 8 comma, it would go there, except those reporting under subdivision 2, which gets the hospitals out of this disclosure because they're doing this whole website thing. Which, see, I think is extremely reasonable. They'll disclose far more information on that website than they'll ever disclose out of these little 20 questions things. Any questions about that, members? Let's adopt that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Okay, that's been taken care of. I was told that it is a fiscal note to give this information to the commissioner if you're a provider. And for the provider's report, costs money. Do you believe that, or St. Paul? And so, the fiscal note of this at the cost.
On subdivision 2?
Yeah, that section 2, subdivision 1. We actually make all the, we're making the clinics and so on report. And so since we're doing this for no cost, I think we need to, Mr. Penn, you can help me with, we need to change this from our commissioner's report to they have to have it on their site. This would be a way to advance, so they have a little book at the front desk with these 20 most things, and they would just keep it available for the rare person that wanted to know. It might be kind of interesting, and actually help them keep data there. Expecting to call anybody. Modern technology. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Excuse me, just a clarification. Do you mean that the provider would keep it at the provider's location?
Right, they keep it.
The commissioner himself would keep it at the commission.
Well, they're going to charge us money to keep it, so.
Okay.
To receive the data and compile it, I guess. And maybe, and I don't see health here today, but. It actually would reduce the burden on the providers by just having to keep it locally, and so they wouldn't have to mail it. It'd save them a stamp, and we're saving costs everywhere here, members. So maybe, how would you say it, Mr. Pender? Each healthcare provider keep the... You would probably strike as... you would just... I'm pretty sure you'd strike that commissioner business. We're on page 7.
Mm-hmm. Would you want to keep the part that says in a form and manner specified by the commissioner? I suppose it might be cost the commissioner.
Yeah, somebody to specify a form, you know. well, how about the 20 most common services? Because that would be, at least that way we get provider disclosure about what they're up to, because I think I like that. So let's strike And so actually we should say shall keep available, or how would you say that? They shall.
Mr. Chair, I'd say on line 31 to strike everything after shall and insert shall prepare a summary of, and then on line 32 strike everything before before the, so it would be prepare a summary of the following.
All right, maybe we should do this annually. So after shall, we should put in annually.
Annually.
Mm-hmm. And so that way it's kind of flexible. They can just make up their own little book.
And then on the next page, page 8, starting in line 7 there, I think we should just make it that this information shall be available to the public through the healthcare provider, period.
Okay.
And then we'd take out paragraph C.
And then we strike lines 9 and 10.
13, too, I think, right?
Yeah, so we strike everything from line 9 to 13.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Members understand that? Mm-hmm. And this actually is the next iteration of the Bradley Amendment from last year. And so we just asked the providers then to look at their computer and see what their top 20 CPTs they did, and then put them in a book, and now that's called disclosure. Someday, if we can ever get any money, we'll have a mail them to the commissioner, but that'd be for probably a different budget cycle. I think it's not burdensome, but I think it does kind of get us to the disclosures and the transparency that we like. And actually, the provider will be the sole judge if they comply. If they'll just make their best estimate, and I think that's we're quiet on. This is something that my clinic could do. The median business that the Senate has is problematic, because I don't know how I'd ever figure out the median of anything, because I wouldn't want to print out all the codes. And all right, well, any questions? I think this moves the ball forward in our disclosure and transparency. Any thoughts to all in favor of that amendment? Please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, actually, opposition. Thank you. So that's cleaned up. Hospital costs, that's great. Evidence-based. Let's move to page 10. And just so you know, I remain convinced that health related boards currently may establish standards anyway. And at least this will give them some guidance if they want to. And all the boards aren't going to want to. And I think until we get to a world where there's a great collaboration amongst the spectrum of healthcare, that this is just a good start. And so I actually have some technical amendments on subdivision 3 on page 10. On line 3, after the word established, insert the term evidence-based, after standards. After standards, insert or guidelines. And then it goes on. And then on line 6, strike the word practice, insert these. Or it actually be the. It'd be the standards. On page 6, line 6, strike practice and insert the. And line 7, delete evidence-based. That's redundant. So repeat that for everybody. On line 3, we're inserting evidence-based after established. After standards, we're inserting or guidelines. On line 6, we're striking practice, inserting the. On line 7, we're striking evidence-based. On line 8, after standards, insert or guidelines. And after these, strike the word standards. And line 12, insert after standards or guidelines. I think that clarifies it better. I'm not going to haggle about what the guideline or standard will address them both. Any questions about that? Mr. Penn.
So, Chair, on line 13, should you want to add or guidelines there?
That's correct. After it's on line 13, insert our guidelines. It's kind of clumsy after a while. Any questions about that? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. we're actually getting this sort of upset. There's an amendment that I'm going to come back to. I think we skipped it already. On page 23, you can tell Mr. Renner that I listened to him. I think that Section 11 is redundant to what they do. At least it's not enough help to clutter this bill up with something that is just maybe appears to be throwing darts. And so I'm going to move to take out Section 11 on page 23. A lot of this was self-disclosed anyway. There's no problem. I'm just trying to even increase. This is kind of my take on the Med-Mal thing. If you can make sure the boards know who the bad actors are, at least or the people who get caught a lot. Maybe they're better ones. They just are more open about things. But I think it's just not the right time for this, so I'm going to move to take out Section 11. Apparently, the Med-Mal providers have to tell boards this stuff anyway. So, any questions about that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, that's out. Moving ahead here. I'm going to back up a little bit to do this hospital, this community service description part. Let's go back to page 13, because that's the end of that section, that article. Back to page 13. And I saw Mr. Last came and went. Mr. Pender can help me with this. I don't want to require people that aren't reporting to report now. I don't see the hospital here today, but they've worked this out. I'm not interested in what Hazelden does or the Courage Center. And Mr. Pender, can you tell me what I need to take out Hazelden, et cetera?
Yes, Mr. Chair. On page 2 of the amendment, this is the A-17 amendment, page 2, strike lines 13 to 18. And then, because we took out paragraph B there, going back to, then we would add on page 1 of the amendment, going back to page 1 of the A-17 amendment, we would say page 13, line 3, strike the A parentheses, okay. A closed parentheses there.
I kind of thought that might be
need that.
Okay. And so members, what this is, and the hospitals work with Lexington and Lance, I think in a really positive way. They were somewhat surprised that they wanted voluntary reporting of this, and until we read the rules that they had to report it anyway. And this merely specifies, even permissive, but just it says that their community benefits or community services or whatever the term is, includes these things so they can get credit for it. They keep track of this stuff anyway, I think, internally. And at least that way, the point of this whole section does not change anything in current law. And I think what we've got, in this amendment, in the delete all, we already fixed that. We broadened out, we incorporated the rule. So we took the rule from rule, put it in statute to clarify what uncompensated care is, and then breaking it down into charity care, bad debt. Is usual and customary reductions mentioned in there somehow? Fee reductions due to a fee schedule?
It's mentioned definitions and rules of charity care and bad debt that can't be counted.
Okay. So at least that way, and then this also brought up the definition of community benefit. And some hospitals provide that they get money for the food, but they give the staff time free for Meals on Wheels, this kind of thing. And so I think it's nice to know that, so they get the proper credit for it. But also nothing, it's very bad for them in trying to make their case about what they're doing when the terms aren't clear. Some senators expressed that concern just recently to me that it's hard to even peg down what they're saying. And so now when my hospital comes, they'll they'll just remember that there's terms we use. We'll understand that bad debt means bad debt, and charity care means charity care. And community. So anyway, that's the point of this. And the hospitals, which is left in the lamps, and they, this is good for them. No burden or content, except for the voluntary, the non-voluntary nature, which they didn't lose because it was already in law. Any questions about that, members? And so I'll incorporate that amendment as suggested in my amendment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That's adopted. Okay, let's move on to, and I'll need some help from people on this section. I tried to, moving it to Article 3. There's, of all the studies that they're doing, there's the one I think has the greatest possibility to move us to a market, and that's the one of the reinsurance. And if I can, the health department says they can do one or they can do a couple things without a fiscal note, and I'm not sure if Congress can. But I would, if I could, Mr. Gross, if you can go back to your principals, who maybe it's you to figure out what things cost. I would be happy to make everything you do in this bill voluntary except for the reinsurance study, if I can keep the fiscal note. If, that would, if you can do one thing for us as something you could incorporate into your work, that's the one thing I think would be the best thing to do. I think that has the greatest possibility, in my view anyway. And what I did in my amendment here was to make all these, unless some pot of money shows up in conference time, they decide to give you money to do a bunch of things. In Article 3, I'm prepared to go to make all those a may, and except for the one about the reinsurance study. And I think that the Department of Health has agreed they could do that. Do you want to come up and talk?
What amendment is that?
It's not an amendment, no. I'm just going to go through.
Okay.
I'm going to go through Article 3. Reps, hi.
The Minnesota Council of Health Plans. On this section, we would just recommend that it probably be done by the Department of Commerce. Since reinsurance is an insurance product, that the Department of Commerce look at that. And that might help you with your fiscal note, maybe some of the pressure.
Yeah, actually, health could do, they can do one or two things for free. So since they still have the plans and stuff, I wanted to make sure that you're, that every, well, since we haven't moved them yet.
As you know, the Commerce regulates the health plans for quality services, yeah. But for financial purposes and insurance purposes, solvency and that sort of thing, which is what this study is more directed at and, okay. And looking at. We think it's more appropriate that just.
Oh, just 3 minutes terminology?
Yeah, only.
Should we have them consult with the Department of Health or something? That may be some point there. Now, what page is that on?
So this is on page
29.
Section 6 and on line 28,
you might
want to say the Commissioner of
Commerce
shall study.
Yeah, Mr. Gross, does that seem sensible to you? Okay. That doesn't hurt your study at all because if they don't help you out. Would there be any help from the Department of Health anyway on that? Or would that be mostly a commerce driven thing?
I would think, Mr. Chair, he's more or less commerce.
And health wouldn't be part of it anyway.
Well, we might tap them for some help, but I don't know if they, I don't know what area that would be at this moment.
All right, so taking that out doesn't cause any harm to the study. And I think you mentioned that would cost an FTE to do that study. I think that's what your email told me. And so maybe if you can see, and we're going to go back to the beginning here. And so let's, and we'll see about our needs. And so then you can, based upon the amended versions, so you can tell me what I'm going to cost you. And but that's the one thing I'd really like to get done if we can. And if there's a way to do that is incorporate into your ordinary work, I'd get to be better. Okay, so let's just walk through on page 24. I wish there were some health people here today, but there aren't. This is the Commissioner of Health, I think we're talking about in Subdivision 8. Is that right, Mr. Pender? Or Mr. Chung?
Yes, Mr. Chair, that's correct.
And do you staff can help you? Do you think that there'd be a cost in this action plan and all this business? Is that going to cost them staff time? Probably there's work involved there?
Mr. Chair, I think it just depends on their judgment since they'd be the ones preparing the...
There's a lot of shells that come in May, so I can be informed if they can do more things later. But on line 20, we'll I'm going to make a bunch of motions, but we'll do them all at once. To move line 20 shall becomes may. And then we can still say what it'd be if they did it, but at least that. And then on. And this is a one we'll save just some money, Mr. Gross. I'm willing to make the 35, on line 35, make that a shall to me. I think that was a big study. That was 3 FTEs. And I was curious if there's a way that, if it wouldn't bias the study, if the plans would be willing, if the no fault auto insurers would be willing to fund part of it, if you're allowed to go after that. I think the real language that allows you to seek other non-state resources. Mr. Pender, I know that's language somewhere in here. Is that, does that modify these studies if they could find other non-state resources?
Mr. Chair, I believe that the language about non-state sources is on that law. It's in, I believe it's in section 4.
Oh, could that relate to these as well?
Mr. Chair, we could add a cross-reference to
would you
to
please
that.
Give me a cross-reference and we'll add that today.
Okay.
Because I think that the, I think it's everything just that it gets done. And people know we're short of money and that commerce is stressed. And I think the plans would benefit by, the insurance carriers would benefit the auto carriers would benefit by such a study so we could at least have the same fact base to operate off on and we could interpret it however we like. At least we'll begin, and so that may be an interest to them for $100,000 or so that might be a positive one, but then they could choose to do it or not. You could choose to try to get resources beyond yours, but right now it's going to be shell to me. And then on line 8, page 25, I think we need to modify, since I'm making this a May, I think I need to, maybe Mr. Chung can give me advice. Page 25, line 8, if in front of it, before the word draw, if we say in performing the study, the Commissioner of Commerce shall.
I think that would work, and
yeah,
you still had it permissive earlier.
Right,
so.
Otherwise it's not, then they have to do one shell thing in there. But when I do the study, I want them to get input. By the way, they don't want input unless they're doing the study. So in line 8, I'm inserting in performing the study. The Commissioner of Commerce shall obtain input. And then I think the next one that has that's germane is line page 25, line 27. That should be should become May, and then I think I need to get rid of the timetable. And so after the word plan, I'd strike the comma no later than January 1, 2006, comma. That would make that permissive. Have I missed anything so far? And then moving along. And then line 33, shall becomes me. And then on page line 35, on line 35 after the word issues, I didn't have a period and then strike to the legislature by that. They may do it and then they shall present a report. I mean, if they do it, they should give us a report. If they don't do it, then the may prevails. And then the, I guess the next, on line 36, that shall ought to stay, right? That's describing what they would do if they may. Okay.
Mr. Chair, maybe just as a suggestion, given that we know your intent to make these studies permissive, perhaps staff in the next version of the DDL, we could make maybe some any conforming changes needed.
Okay.
In case we missed some of the shells or may.
Right, I'm just trying to make sure I've got this clear. Yeah, time's moving. Oh, and then on line 20, page 26, line 36, it would be helpful to clarify after the word resources and other non-state sources. Is that where the cross-reference might go, or is that...
Mr. Where are you?
On line 26, page 26, line 36, after resources and certain and other non-state resources. Is that... helpful or not? Would that clarify?
let's see. Staff's report.
Mr. There is also some reference on top of page 27 to the use of non-state resources, where it's directing the commissioners to seek staff support from private sector entities. This is paragraph B in the top of
page 27. And health plan companies, that would include auto insurance.
We need to add insurance.
Well, no, Mr. Chair.
What's the general term for health insurance? Health insurers, would that be considered an auto company?
No, Mr. Chair. I think you need to say auto, or just other, maybe something like other insurers that pay health claims.
Yeah, health plan companies, other insurers. I'd like that, just to make sure they could, if they wanted to seek those dollars. And I think I'll take your advice on the Shell May part. The and then I'll negotiate with whatever we can do after that. Just that I would really like to find, I was hoping that they could do some work on page 27, that they could do some work on alternative and complementary work. There's just some splendid opportunities there to be found. Case in point, being Dr. Ann Kelly at the U with her medical work and her with those high need kids. But she's considered a complementary and alternative in her profession, as she's gone forward using some very clever, good ideas. And I would really hope that we could do something in that still has to be made, but in paragraph C on line page 27 about electronic stuff, and then getting them to recommend what the heck one we should do, what standards we should pick so we can get some consistency. And then I'd really hope also that in the D one that that we can get some help getting these little clinics electronically billing, especially for the state programs. Clinics like mine, who can't figure it out. And there's got to be a lot like us that just don't know how to pull it together. So that's my editorial comment. Those all become me's with some sadness. And then on subdivision 4, that those are similarly have to become me's. So we're going to... And then, so... okay, so I'll trust you to do the me's. And let's... well, let's move that amendment now and try to deal with all the May Shell business. Any questions about that amendment? And then we'll lead through what you've done and make sure it makes sense. But I want you to see the lead on the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I don't see Ms. Jones here today, but you can tell her I'm looking after her interests. There's an act on page 28. In the spirit of camaraderie and moving this forward, on lines 31 to 34, I would move to delete everything after the 2. And insert, I've got this written down, but insert instead, a review of the factors contributing to the high cost of providing language interpreters and recommendations to lower these costs. I've got it written down so I can give it to staff. I'll read it again. So we're deleting the new language after the 2 on line 31 and all the rest following the line 34, which is the discussion about cost, about who should pay, which apparently is controversial and may derail the whole section from going. And so at least we can advance this topic. And we're so inserting a review of the factors contributing to the high cost of providing language interpreters and recommendations to lower these costs, whether it be phone, voice, et cetera. Any questions about that? I believe that with that addition, this section becomes not controversial, except for those who wanted the original language, and now it's controversial for them, just for what's not in the bill. any questions about that? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, that's adopted. On page 29, Mr. Gross had some comments about this, and this is going to be another, maybe you can come to the table and have to ask the question. Is there a cost to do this, or is this something that you're going to do internally that you could do? The study on page 28 and 29 about the med mail.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think we can provide that information. Talking to our property casualty actuary, Nancy Meyer, she indicated that some of this information is no longer obtainable, but whatever information we can get from the health plans, we will certainly provide that. I think the only other suggestion I had was that the date of March 1st be changed because...
I'll get to that in a second. I'm interested in the cost part. If we made this a main, would that take some pressure off the reinsurance study that you could incorporate that into your work, or is that a kind of a big study?
Mr. Chairman, I'd have to check with staff because we're talking about two different sections.
I understand that. And so I'm going to relieve any burden I can from you on my other work to feed that. So I think for now we'll make this on me. Just to show you my good faith. So I'm going to, on line 36, page 28, I'm going to make the shelf on me. Okay, well, fine. So that's already been done. But also on page 29, then, Mr. Gross, you would want July 1 then? Would that be?
I think that would be appropriate.
So on line 21, we'll change March to July. And then on line 18, do you want to change that to April then? Because they don't report until February and March. Or what do you like?
April 1st.
Okay. But it would mean April Fool's report. It would be still, you have to give it. So on line 18, that changed April to February to April. And then, Mr. Chun, on section 6, on line 28, I'd like to leave that a shell.
Oh, okay.
And I think I have run out of the money. Okay. Oh, we have to vote on that. All in favor of the date changes, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That prevails. Let me make sure I'm out of stuff here. Oh, and Mr. Chun, can you clarify to me that on the page 22, oh yes, mother, we have to go back to some things here. We're doing fine for time. On that reporting on uncompensated care, I don't know what page it is anymore, but is that that does not include nursing homes and long-term care facilities. Are they out of that?
Mr. Are you talking about the definition of provider used in the... Mr. Chair, it's intended to be a broad definition. There's specific language excluding nursing facilities from that, but it's not a broader term stating, say, long-term care facilities.
All I want is we just wanted to, this is for hospitals that currently report. That's all we really wanted to include in that group.
Mr. Chair,
wait a minute. This is a shady kid. So, Mr. Pender, I guess that's you.
Mr. Chair, the part about the uncompensated care reporting, you're talking about it only applies to hospitals and outpatient surgery centers.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I was talking about the other cost reporting.
Okay,
issue.
Yeah.
That's right.
So I just didn't want to include them. They were concerned that they were included at one point, and I don't know if they were, but I just wanted to make sure that I hadn't done that to them. I think that's good. Okay, now we can go back to our homework assignments here. Did you come up with the language for section 1 where that was going to go? Welcome back, Tom.
Tom, get your palms up there, you know. Get your totally all loaded up.
Okay, you want to read?
Mr. Chair, I believe that this was in consultation with the health plan company representatives, and I believe that the language they would prefer would be as follows. And I think this language could be added probably as a new subdivision or section in the last article dealing with studies.
Okay.
So it would be the following. So it would say, health plan companies in cooperation with health care providers shall review prior authorization procedures administered by utilization of the organizations and health plan companies, comma, to ensure the cost-effective use of prior authorization. And I think the other question for the committee is whether or not you want the specific reporting date, recommendations to be reported to the legislature by a certain time, whether it be to legislative chairs or to the legislature, or just leave the language this way.
Does that address other administrative efficiencies that they could think of, or is it just about prior authorization?
As written, Mr. Chair, it just refers to prior authorization procedures.
The ones are already in the bill.
It's already in the bill.
About the plans right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. So that's fine. Well, let's do that for now. And so I would move to strike on page one, we strike section one, mm-hmm. and then insert that as you suggested. So,
Mr. Chair, did you also want some specific reporting date, or do you just want to leave it more informal? And
I don't think we want. We don't need okay. a report date. They promised to work really hard on it, and that's good enough for me, I guess. Okay, all in favor of that, say aye. Aye. There being one vote, losing our people. Then there was the other thing about the cash part. Did you have some language on that, Mr. Pender?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'm just finished it just now.
Thank you.
This is not polished particularly, and I can certainly get it ready as a amendment for people to look at before the next committee. But basically, it would read like this: it'd be a paragraph A that would say, notwithstanding any other provision of law, it is not a criminal offense for a health care provider to provide care to a patient for a discounted fee. And I think I should maybe define discounted fee to include no fee. And then paragraph B, so that deals with the criminal part of this. Then B, a health plan company or other insurer must not consider, in determining a provider's usual and customary charge, standard charge, or allowable charge used as a basis for determining the provider's payment by the health plan company or other insurer, the following discounted fee situations: (1) care provided to relatives, (2) care provided to patients who can afford only the discounted charge, and (3) care provided for which a discount is given in exchange for cash payment, provided that the discount does not reduce the charge below the Medicare approved amount.
That's a good place. So maybe if we could ditch the word criminal and just say it's not unlawful. I'd like that better. I think that covers criminal and also civil. But can you just, it's not a criminal. In the first sentence you had something.
Yes, we could
use the word unlawful instead of.
Okay.
It's kind of a double negative, but it's so. Leave me that just the first bit where you used the word criminal.
Yeah.
Or leave it, put the word unlawful in there.
Notwithstanding any other provision of law, it is not unlawful for a healthcare provider to provide care to a patient for a reduced fee.
Should we just say it's permitted?
Well, that's the way I had it worded when I first.
Let's go back to this.
May provide, notwithstanding any other provision of law, a healthcare provider may provide care to a patient for a discounted fee.
I think that's more positive. Hi. I didn't bring any coffee.
Mr. Chairman, no, but Representative Butler did.
Oh, yeah. For himself, yeah.
The only question I have, I apologize, I'm not an attorney, is using the word.
We're glad you're
fee,
not an attorney.
Using the word fee rather than using rate or charge may imply the ability to have two different fee schedules, which is the point you raised, Mr. Chairman, about that being a violation of RICO.
What term would you prefer?
Charge or rate payment?
That's fine.
That's fair. To allow a discounted payment, how about allow a discounted payment? Can you work that in there somehow?
Yes.
This is actually what a committee should do. We actually work on things, wordsmithing in the middle here. I can see that people have been drawn by many. The members can't get enough of it. So. Do you want to read back what you have just so we can see what we're going to vote on?
Notwithstanding any other provision of law, comma, a health care provider may...
accept a discounted payment?
Accept a discounted payment, I guess that's... I think that's better than allow, maybe, huh? Or following on my original thing, notwithstanding any other provision of law, a healthcare provider may provide care to a patient for a discounted payment.
That'll work for today. I have a feeling it's going to change a bit. Yeah, we're good. That'll make sense. I'm going to make you glad. You see, you didn't like that part. And then you would include other opportunities. And so read the rest of it, too, if you wouldn't mind.
Paragraph B, a health plan company or other insurer must not consider in determining a provider's usual and customary charge, comma, standard charge, comma, or allowable charge used as a basis for determining a provider's payment by the health plan company or other insurer, comma, the following discounted fee situations. One, care provided to relatives, as we say, relatives of the provider. Everybody's a relative of somebody.
That includes in-laws.
Two, care provided to patients who can afford only the discounted payment. And three, care provided for which a discount is given in exchange for cash payment, comma, provided that the discount does not reduce the payment to below the Medicare approved amount.
Yeah, I think we'll be working. That's good enough for today. I think the intent is clear, and I think it needs a little cleanup. But that's very good for today. Any questions from members? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed. Electoral so is unanimous. And we have to strike. I move to. This is great. This is how our king does it. We've all checked in. I move to delete section 5 on page 4 and 5. Any questions? All those in favor say aye. I suppose. It's just great to be in charge. Any other amendments and members? Seeing none, actually we're 2 minutes early. I appreciate your work on all this, all the audience especially. And actually with Alpine Prosthesis, I think that we are getting a product that can actually progress. And it's pretty darn cheap all of a sudden. Not a lot of money in this bill. We have a $5,000 committee budget. If we gave that to Congress, would that help to offset the cost of that reinsurance? But we could appropriate that, I betcha, in this bill. Anyway, so we're going to meet next week. There'll be a DE4 available. This is actually several hours away, I would expect, with all the changes we made.
I think so, Mr. Chair.
They'll be copied and available whenever they're ready. We'll be meeting Monday or Tuesday. I don't know just when. Anything interesting? Watch, and we'll try to make it clearly known. I don't know when we're going to meet. So we're going to be probably one more meeting and then we're out of here. So thank you very much, and we're adjourned.